Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Rebecca Frey, number 20010 with the Public Defender's Office, appearing today on behalf of Mr. Joseph. This morning, I wish to address the first issue in my brief dealing with the jury's question during deliberations. And I don't think that there's really any dispute between the parties about what the law is. I think the law in this area is pretty well settled. I think the real question is, was this jury question a question of law that couldn't be answered by reference back to the jury instructions themselves? And I want to kind of start with what the issues were in the case, because, of course, the prosecutor had requested a jury instruction that the judge rejected, and that was that the return of property is not a defense. I think the issues in the case concerned whether Mr. Joseph was authorized to make purchases, because it was his contention through his interview with the detective that he was, and it was Mr. Mitchell's contention that he wasn't for the items listed on the exhibit. So I think authorization, whether it was actual or implied by his job, was an issue. Whether he had the intent to permanently deprive, I think, was another issue. And of course, determining the value of the theft from that extended exhibit was a final issue. What defense counsel never argued was that somehow returning this property at Mitchell's request evidence that he had no intent to permanently deprive Patterson of their property, okay? And I think that's the reason that the judge rejected that instruction at the jury instruction conference. It was something that was already covered by the instructions that the jury was receiving, and it really wasn't an issue at trial. It wasn't argued in closing argument as an issue. So what is the jury question? The jury question asks the judge if Patterson has the purchased property in their possession, even if they're unaware of it, okay, then does the theft instruction, does the theft charge apply in the same manner? And it's my position that this isn't just purely a legal question. And I think the case, there are two cases that I cited in my brief that help answer whether this is a legal question. The first one is the Bass case decided by this court. And in that case, the jury asked three questions concerning the complicity instruction. Does knowledge have to start before the crime, or can it occur during the commission of the crime? Does failing to stop the crime have, you know, in some impact on the instruction? And a division of this court said, you know, while it's clearly a question about the complicity instruction, that what the jury was asking the court to do was to apply these kind of facts to the complicity instruction. And for the court to have answered those questions, the court would have been expressing an opinion on the facts of the case. And that's prohibited under Leonardo and the ABA standards.
What about sort of this more general body of law that talks about supplemental instructions, and even if they're unnecessary, they're not necessarily prohibited? Can you sort of address that situation?
Well, I think that if they don't affect what the prosecutor's burden of proof is in the case and their correct statements of law, that's fine. I don't think we ever argued that the return of property is not a defense was an incorrect statement of law. That is a correct statement of law. But it was that necessary? That wasn't the question that the jury asked. And I think this whole notion of property that Patterson possessed about which it was unaware takes it out of the return of property question. And so I there is this whole body of case law about supplemental instructions, and sometimes it's fine to give the supplemental instruction if there's no prejudice to the parties, and maybe it might help the jury understand. I think it's when they're purely questions of law, it's absolutely necessary, like in the most recent case, the Robles case, where the jury asked about the definition of seize and carry. Well, the instructions didn't provide that definition in the detail. So that supplemental instruction was really necessary for the jury to make a decision about whether a kidnapping occurred in that case. But in this case, this supplemental instruction was not what the jury was asking about.
Go ahead. Was it even responsive? Was the judge's instruction responsive to the question?
No, not, in my opinion, it was not. It was non-responsive, and that's why it was very much like the Gracie case that I also cited in my brief, because in that case, the judge's response was non-responsive to the question. The question here begged for a yes or no response. If this, does the theft instruction still apply? It's either yes or no. And if you look back to the elemental instruction, which was, I believe, number 12, if you look to the mens rea instruction, culpable mental state, which was number 8, and if you look to the definition instruction, which was 14, and it dealt with property of another incorporated possessory rights.
Is the issue then that as to when a jury asks a question, first, whether the judge should or should not respond, and second of all, whether the response addresses the issue? I mean, is that where we are? Are you arguing that the judge should have responded and was required to respond and was required to be responsive?
Well, yes. And I think defense counsel below said, judge, you're not answering the question the jury's asking. So I think, yes, it's my position that it was non-responsive. Okay. But it's also my position that the judge shouldn't have answered the question with any specifics. What the answers to the jury's questions were in the instructions themselves. And so that's what I think. The second part of the court's response, I think, is fine. I don't have a problem with going back to the instructions. I think it would have been better, like in the Bass case, the court referred the jury back to the instructions and also specifically to the definition of knowledge, because that's what, from the question, it appeared the jury was struggling with. And I think in this particular case, a similar reference back to the instructions, like the judge did in the second part of his response, was completely appropriate. I think in addition, it would have been helpful to refer the jury to maybe the definition instruction that talked about property of another and how the whole notion of possession plays into the crime of theft. And then, of course, the mens rea instruction. So I think that would have been a better way to resolve it.
So just so I'm clear, your position, consistent with the position of defense counsel at trial, is that this didn't require any additional information.
Correct.
That everything that the jury needed was in the instructions.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, on the question of it being non-responsive, what's the harm if indeed everything that the jury needed to know was in the original instructions and the court did remind the jury?
Well, I think the fact that non-responsive statement, the return of property is not a defense to the crime of theft, that I think implied that all of the property possessed by Patterson, okay, that was purchased by my client, was stolen. That carries that's the implication when the court comes out and says return of property is not a defense. The implication is, well, okay, then everything that he purchased wasn't with authorization, and that by implication is stolen. And so I think that reduces the prosecutor's burden of having to prove that property was stolen or was purchased without authorization. And I think that instruction also affects how they answered the interrogatory, because they had to determine, okay, well, if the theft occurred here, what level of theft, by answering the interrogatories on the back of the verdict form. So I think that's what the harm was. Like it was in Gracie, you have this non-responsive response that essentially lowers the burden of proof.
How was the case tried, and how was the closing argument couched in terms of, you know, was there evidence that Patterson was in possession of items it had claimed were stolen, and it somehow just wasn't aware of it? And was there argument that says those items, therefore, were never stolen?
Defense counsel didn't specifically argue that in closing argument that I can recall. When I re-reviewed it, it seemed to be more of a, the prosecution hasn't met its burden of proof. It was kind of a reasonable doubt closing argument. And so, no, defense counsel never specifically said, you know, made the argument addressed by the questions, but there certainly was evidence in the record. My client told the investigator that, you know, these items, I think the investigator was asking about Home Depot, and he said, well, you know what, I built a meeting room on out at the Gilchrist office. It's out, you know, in remote Colorado so that I could hold my training sessions, and I went out and I bought, you know, office supplies, chairs, tables, whatever office supplies to conduct these meetings. So that would be something that Mitchell might not be aware of. And I think it might be something that while the supervisors or the people that came to that office were aware of, that maybe within the accounting system itself, Patterson wasn't aware of that they, but it existed. And the fact that he told the investigator that and that the prosecutor didn't bring anybody in to rebut that tells me it's there. He bought food and beverages for the employees when he conducted his training sessions, whether they were there or out on the rigs. So that's something that Patterson wouldn't be aware of. They wouldn't be aware of the number of trained employees they had and the resources that were used to bring those or to train those employees. So those are kind of intangible benefits that are property, at least the office's property, that Patterson might not be aware of.
All of that primarily relevant to the question of whether he had the intent to permanently deprive.
Correct. And whether he had authorization, because if you're the safety supervisor, I think it's implied that you can get the things you need to do your job.
Counsel, I've got to say, when I looked at this question and I put myself in the position of the trial court, I thought, what are you supposed to do? You know, I mean, because as you know, just as often the court decides, well, this is one where we're going to say everything you need is in the original instructions, and then the issue comes up on appeal that the answer wasn't sufficiently responsive. And then under Leonardo, the court's duty was to sweep away the jury's confusion with arresting clarity or something like that. And so my question for you is, how is the trial court supposed to tell? I mean, would you provide to me the principles on which the trial court could have determined that this was one that really calls for a comment on the evidence and is not really about a question about the law?
Well, I think defense counsel raised that below. Well, first of all, it doesn't ask about an element, okay? It asks about application of the theft charge, and to me that raises red flags when you start asking about applying.
To be responsive, the answer should have been yes.
No, yes.
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 Okay.
Yes. And then we have these cases out there. We have the Bass case, which was similar. We have the Cottrell case, which also involved application of facts that the jury was asking about to the felony murder instruction and the timing of the robbery. So there was some case law out there to help the court distinguish. And, you know, it's interesting that in the record, the court, and this is at pages 893 and 894, the court says, well, the question itself does not make the conclusion that the purchased property is in Patterson's possession. And this is when defense counsel is saying, well, Judge, you're making a comment on the facts. But later on, and I think that's wrong, I think the question itself does say, because it says if Patterson is in possession, whether they know it or not.
And what I had seen from the transcript was that the jury was really asked, the defense counsel's position was, this really requires the jury first to make this predicate finding that the property is in the employer's control.
But that was one of the questions they had to, that was one of the questions they had to decide. Yes.
But isn't that implicit in the jury's question? I mean, they're going to be, okay.
Yeah, I think it is, because then the court says later on, he says, but so they, meaning the jury, are making that determination, not me. So yeah, they had in their question, they'd made this determination. Okay, if, you know, they're not going to say, well, we've decided this and that, but it's like the other cases, the case law. If this is true, then how does that affect the...
So isn't that really a question of law? Are they just asking for the essentially the legal consequence of this fact if they've determined it?
Well, I don't think it's a pure question of law that evidence is a misunderstanding of the legal principle. No. I think they're asking, how do we apply these facts to the law that you've given us? And that's for the jury to decide. The answer to those questions are sitting there in the jury instructions. So that's not something the court, I think, can get involved in answering under Leonardo and under the ABA standards.
Your bottom line is the court should not have responded, or it should have simply referred to the existing instructions.
I think it should have referred to the existing instructions. I think you have to respond. I think you have to say something. But saying you've got all the instructions you need and maybe referring to the ones you feel would be helpful is appropriate. Thank you. I would ask, based on that you reverse my client's convictions.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rebecca Jones. My registration number is 31044, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. I'd like to just begin with your question, Judge Russell. I believe that the jury's question was simply saying, if we make a determination of facts, and this is our determination of facts, how does the law apply here? Does the theft instruction apply the same way? And in responding, the trial court gave a correct statement of the law. Now, certainly we can argue about whether or not the court should have responded at all, or should they have simply referred the jury back to the original instructions. But either way, the result is the same, because on appeal, even if we assume that the court should have simply referred the jury back to the original instructions, in this case, the court did respond. And to the extent that the response was non-responsive or superfluous or unnecessary, any error was harmless in this case. The trial court gave the jury a proper elemental instruction on the charge of theft. Its supplemental instruction to the jury was a proper statement of the law. And in addition to that, the court referred the jury back to the original instructions and asked them to consider the instructions, interrogatories, and verdict forms as a whole in conducting their deliberations.
But so what if it was confusing or misleading to the jury? Then doesn't that have a sort
the
of...
The original instructions, Your Honor?
The supplemental instruction that came in. I understand that if it was unnecessary or superfluous, so what? Mm-hmm. But what if it was irrelevant or confusing to the jury and sent them off in a different direction, as opposed to just saying, you know, go back to the instructions?
Well, again, I guess that would require us to speculate somewhat on what was in the jury's mind at the time. But again, because it was a proper statement of the law that the court provided, I can't imagine in what way that would have erroneously altered the way that the jury viewed the evidence and the instruction in this case. I mean, the court wasn't making a comment on the facts that were presented. It didn't make an erroneous statement of the law. It simply pointed out to the jury what the law is. Now, we're talking about being responsive to this question, and the answer, you know, simply could have been yes. But the reason that the answer is yes is because that, you know, returning property is not a defense to theft. So that's why the instruction still applies the same way. So it did explain to the jury how the return of property factors in to the elemental instruction on theft. So I don't believe it was misleading to the jury, and the jury didn't provide any follow-up questions indicating that it had any concern over the court's response, or that it had any additional questions, or that the court hadn't properly answered its question the first time.
Well, counsel, possibly the reason the answer is also yes is because property that was once in the defendant's possession and then returned to the employer's possession, that may or may not have indicated an intent to permanently deprive. I mean, it very often happens that an employee will have the employer's property and then return the employer's property. Now, that may not be a defense to theft if the employer once had formed the intent to permanently deprive, but neither does his fact of possession, you know, and his return somehow alleviate the prosecution's burden of proving the initial intent. So, I mean, it's a little confusing this way to know precisely what the jury has in mind when it's asking this question.
But again, the court's instruction, or the supplemental instruction to the jury, didn't negate the jury's responsibility to find that the defendant had the intent to permanently deprive. And in fact, the court specifically referred the jury back to those instructions as well and told the jury to consider those instructions as a whole in reaching their verdict. If the court has no further questions, I'd ask that this court affirm.
Jones, I want to explore a little bit more Ms. Frayray's argument and get your reaction to it. As I understand her argument, it is that by focusing the jury on the return of property, that what the court did was to focus the jury on a defense rather than a failure of a proof of an element. Let me say that differently. You know, the prosecution had the duty to prove that Mr. Joseph took the property with the intent to deprive Patterson.
Yes.
And as I'm understanding her argument, there's evidence that, one, he never took the property, and two, he didn't ever deprived the owner of the property. He bought it for the owner, for Patterson, used it for Patterson, and never took it in the first place, and never formed the requisite intent. But by instructing the jury that regarding the return of property as a defense, what the judge in effect told the jury was the real issue here is whether he returned it after having unlawfully taken it. That's as I understand the argument. How do you address that?
Well, again, I think that the court's response was to the jury's question, which was, how does the theft charge apply when Patterson has purchased property from Exhibit 1, which was the credit card statement, in their possession, even if they are unaware? Now, the defendant is talking about property that he purchased to build a meeting room and supplies. There was also quite a bit of testimony that after Mitchell, the investigator, met with the defendant, he asked him to return any property that he had purchased for personal use and to return that the next day. And there was quite a bit of discussion during his testimony and follow-up questions from the jury regarding his testimony about why wasn't that evidence inventoried, why wasn't that evidence photographed, do you have a list of what that evidence was? So it's possible that the jury's question was actually focused on that evidence, and do they have to know what property was returned? Do we have to know where all of this is, or, you know, is that really relevant to our determination here? So again, I'm not sure whether the jury was talking about building materials that it used for a meeting or whether it was talking about property that the defendant did in fact return to the company the day after the interview. But again, the response to the question remains a proper statement of the law. And again, I think by referring the jury back to the instructions as a whole, it didn't unnecessarily focus on the returned property to the exclusion of everything else. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. It's a pleasure to have such skilled arguing. The case now stands submitted, and the case and an opinion will issue in due course.